Hello everyone, now that I'm not making videos for YouTube as a priority anymore, I can finally get back into response videos. Oh goody.
Hello and welcome to this ABC News special looking at the representation and power of women in Australian politics.
Not equal representation in labouring and construction, not equal representation in garbage collection or landscaping. No, just equal representation where there's power, influence and an air conditioner.
I'm Patricia Carvallis and it's great to have your company.
Not for me, it isn't.
As we edge closer to the federal election this year, the nation is still grappling with the demands of a third wave movement of women.
17th wave, Patricia, get with the program.
In the wake of revelations of a toxic environment for women in Parliament and, sadly, way beyond...
Yeah, that which can be asserted without evidence can be dismissed without evidence.
There are calls for massive changes to policy to address the demands of women.
An overarching narrative manufactured by the media, and in particular the ABC, that employs a victimhood narrative and that operates for the express purpose of attempting to place women into positions of power with the necessary attributes to attain power in office, be that they are women, and that if any disparity exists between the numbers of men and women in politics, then it must be because women are downtrodden, sexually and violently abused, traumatised, or possibly exposed to the possibility of being traumatised. You know how it rolls.
So, as we celebrate the achievements of women on this International Women's Day, why is it that our own Parliament is still so behind when it comes to gender equity?
Well, I guess with there not being a single legal barrier or social stigma attached to women being in politics in any way, I guess we can just put it down to not as many women as men wanting to make politics a career, can't we? No? I'll go on then.
In a moment, you'll be joined by a political panel of federal politicians representing Labor, the Coalition and the Greens, looking at where we're at and what considerable work is still left to be done. And then Walkley award-winning journalists Samantha Maiden and Catherine Murphy join you to analyse where we're going as Australia gets ready to vote once again. But first, ABC News has crunched the numbers looking at the history of women's participation and representation in Parliament. The story today too. So how far have we really come to achieving gender equality?
Gee, let me guess, nowhere near far enough yet.
Let's bring in ABC political reporter Jane Norman to explain it all. Welcome, Jane. Give us a sense of the history here. What is the history of the representation of women in our Parliament?
Well, Patricia, it starts out with women having had the franchise the longest and for the longest time doing fuck all with it.
Well, Patricia, Australia was actually the first country in the world to give most women the right to vote and to stand for Parliament. But on the latter, progress has been painfully slow. For the first four decades of Federation, women made up a grand total of 0% of the Australian Parliament until 1943, when Enid Lyons became the first woman to be elected to the lower house and Dorothy Tangney, the first woman to take a seat in the Senate. From there, representation in the House of Representatives grew extremely slowly. It wasn't for another five decades until 1996 before more than 10% of the seats were occupied by women. Today, that figure's just over 30%.
But it's not enough.
The Senate has consistently done better for female representation. It hit 10% in the early 80s before reaching over 50% for the first time at the last election. Now, much of that success can be attributed to Labor.
But of course, the ALP are just amazing to women, and the large numbers of women in the party would never form a cabal of bitches to bully and ostracise other women in the party.
It has forced change. Since the 1990s, the party's used quotas to boost the number of women in its ranks. Now, it's on the verge of achieving 50-50 representation.
It's funny how something that's wrong is the very thing they boast about being a good thing. That's because gender quotas are a bad thing, not a good thing. The reason that it's a bad thing that you numbskulls don't get is that quotas are a system whereby a woman gains a ministerial appointment not on merit, but because she has a vagina, because that's the only way to achieve gender quota targets. You have to give preference to the woman for merely being a woman, or you won't reach your target. It's sexist and discriminatory against men. It's that simple.
No such trouble with comparisons across the ditch, though. New Zealand is almost perfectly poised for equality.
Well, it's not like Jacinda Ardern isn't amazing or anything.
And there, as in many other countries, parity was no accident. Targets and quotas helped women leap democracy's gender pitfalls.
I love this next bit. This is gold.
It's not that women couldn't get there without some rules to support them, Patricia. Just that those rules might propel them a little faster.
Well, with the rule being you're not eligible because you're male, I'd say the women's will get there damn quick. They won't get there on merit, and everyone will know that, but they'll get there nonetheless.
So now that we know where we're at, what do a few of the key women in Parliament think needs to be done to address both representation levels and key policy issues? Joining you, Susan Lee, Environment Minister and a member of the recently established Women's Cabinet Task Force, Senator Katie Gallagher, who's Labor's finance spokeswoman and former ACT Chief Minister.
Long-time YouTubers may remember Katie Gallagher gaining a bit of interweb notoriety when she used the term mansplaining on Mitch Fifield.
Let me just stop
you so you don't waste a line of questioning. I'm just giving you...
I love the mansplaining. I'm enjoying it.
You're loving what?
The mansplaining that's going on.
What are you suggesting, repeating processes
which are not related to the question that I've asked.
What's mansplaining, Senator?
Well, it's the slightly patronising and condescending way that you're responding to my questions.
Well, I would suggest, Senator, that if you're putting the word man in front of some description of what I'm doing, you're doing that which I'm sure you're very much against, is making a sexist implication about how I'm conducting my role
well,
as a man.
Well, then the easiest way
what,
to do
is
it...
Is that what you're saying, Senator?
Well, what I'm saying is that the way you've been responding to me has been patronising and condescending, and I have responded to that. So the easiest way to deal with this
Imagine, Senator, if I said you were woman-splaining. You're saying that I'm mansplaining.
Well, it is a term that's used.
Is it
when,
by whom?
By rude senators
who are seeking to make gender an issue. Stop being a hypocrite.
Well,
conduct yourself appropriately for this place.
I'm sorry you're so offended by the use of the word. It is a word that's used. I'm surprised that you're so shocked by the use of the word.
No, I'm just calling hypocrisy. Hypocrisy, well, thy name is Labor. Thy name is Senator Gallagher.
So anyway, she's a good choice to have on this ABC International Women's Day program.
And Senator Maureen Faruqi, Greens Education Spokeswoman.
Greens Education Spokeswoman. Imagine if that ever got hold of your children.
Welcome to all of you. And I'm going to begin with you, Minister Lee. Much of the success Labor appears to have achieved that has led to it being really on the cusp of delivering gender parity in the Parliament is because it used quotas to boost the numbers of women in its ranks. Do you think they may also help your side of politics?
I've always said, Patricia, that quotas have a role to play.
No, they don't, because artificially creating an equal outcome isn't equality. It's created artificially by discriminating. Equal opportunity is true equality, and equal opportunity is something women already have in politics. Ergo, what needs to be done to further women in politics is nothing.
And I've also said that I'll take that recommendation to my state party division. It's a decision that would be made by the party itself because it's about females in the Liberal Party and not a decision to be made by individual members. However, I almost feel that the tide has gone beyond that with the things and the events that have happened this year. And I also want to make this point.
Hang on, you haven't even told us what things and events you're talking about yet.
It's not just about quotas in the Parliament. It's about quotas out there in rural and regional Australia. We're 50% plus on government boards, but we need female representation across the board.
OK, so you've just confirmed to us that women are already more than 50% running government agencies. But is that not enough?
where we don't have it now. So I want to see this tackled on many fronts. I don't just want to focus on what's inside the building. I'm a rural and regional MP. Right now I'm in Mildura, where there are so many issues that are peculiar to rural and remote women that I also want to bring forward.
I just don't have any intention of saying anything about what they are.
So when we look at that figure, Minister, just over 30% of the lower house having women members, a lot of it is attributable, that lower number, to your side of politics. Does it frustrate you?
Sometimes it does. And if somebody asks me, have you got enough women here or here, my answer is always not enough, whatever forum I'm sitting in. So, of course, we haven't got enough.
In fact, the issue of women is one area where I can even chastise my own party as not having done enough. Such is the power of, the terrible oppression of women.
But I don't want to decry the contributions of strong men or people from diverse backgrounds that are not necessarily related to gender. But I do want to see more women. I've been in Parliament a long time, as you know, and I can say that over 20 years, the journey for us has been a positive one. And when I see the role of the parliamentary institutions, the change that has been made this year through Respect at Work, the roadmap to respect, through all of the upheaval that we've seen, all of that plays to a really positive environment for women, more so than it was before. So I want to celebrate that on International Women's Day too, and remind the people out there in the community that we're there for them. We're not just there for ourselves, we're there for them.
Wow, she really says a whole bunch of nothing, that one, doesn't she?
Katie Gallagher, yes, your party is on the verge of achieving that 50-50 representation. But I'm going to be blunt here.
In other words, you're not going to be very sharp.
In some of those key roles, opposition leader, deputy leader, there are still men. What does that say about how difficult this is, or the internal culture?
The erroneous assertion that if a man is in charge of anything, then it must be broken in some way.
Hi, PK, and thanks for being with you all and sharing a great panel. Look, there's always more work to be done. Labor has been clear, you know, for the last, well, it's almost 30 years now, about accelerating and supporting women to get into those key roles, to get into Parliament and more broadly across the community. It's one of the reasons I got involved in politics was there was no women in the Labor Party locally when I first stood for election, and, you know, there was many women that were outraged at that, and we've changed that over time.
But you're not outraged by the dearth of women in dangerous and filthy jobs, are you? No, of course not.
So, we're at almost 50% now, which is a great result across the federal parliament. And I think their shadow cabinet is almost at 50% too. And, of course, we've had the first female prime minister proudly from the Labor Party as well. So there's always more work to be done. But I think Labor's got a really strong record. And there's no doubt with, you know, women like Tanya and Penny and Christina and Simon, Michelle Rowland, all of that sitting around the cabinet table, you know, women's views and attitudes and representation is well met.
It's well met. Well, it sounds it. You're boasting pretty much federal cabinet seats being at parity, shadow cabinet being at almost 50%, more than half government agencies being run by women, and yet you intermingle those realities with statements like, there's still more work to be done. It's like, what are you women even talking about?
Senator Faruqi, the Greens talk a lot about gender equality, but even in your party, it is most often men who have been leaders. That's with the exception, of course, of Christine Milne, who was Greens leader. What's your analysis of why this even happens on your side, on the progressive side of politics?
Hi, PK, and hello, everyone. Well, we know that women's rights are always hard fought for.
Not fought for, nagged for.
And they probably will be for a while. But listen, I'm very proud to be part of a party that has 60% women.
Yeah, I'm like that when I catch the train and notice that there's more women than men on the train. I'm suddenly overcome with a sense of immense pride. That's because I'm completely fixated on gender. Then when I got off the train, I was standing at the lights waiting to cross when I realised there were more women than men standing there. I did what one should expect from a fixated gender person of brownness, and fell to the ground sobbing uncontrollably in the fetal position.
In Parliament, and half of those women are black and brown women. And I think that's an issue that isn't discussed too much.
There's a word for people who go out of their way to take note of the race of their colleagues. They're called racists.
I mean, I was surprised when I found out that I was the first ever Muslim woman in any parliament in Australia, and that was 2013. That is absolutely shocking that we live in this amazing multicultural country with people from everywhere around the world, and we don't have close to any representation of that people in our parliament.
Only a bit over one in every 50 people in Australia is Muslim. How many of those are not even adult and thus not eligible for election? And how many of the eligible population are interested in politics as a career? It seems to me that you're a really strong advocate for Muslims being massively overrepresented in parliament.
And the, the Liberal government's women's cabinet task force, I was having a look at it, and that has more men in it than women of colour.
Notice that she's not complaining that the LNP's women's task force has more men than women, but that it has more men than women of brownness. It just confirms that the far-left Marxists are the most racist people on the planet. Her problem is that those that make up the women's task force are white. No acknowledgement that there's a women's task force, but no men's task force, bearing in mind that men don't need a task force because we have a propensity to work our way to the top rather than complain our way to the top. But she typifies the lack of appreciation these women have for their position and comfort in life. Feminists wanted women to work and not be reliant upon men. No problem. Now shut the fuck up and do some real work. And by the way, see how far you get around town only using the roads and crossing the bridges that were built by women. Yeah, good luck with that, Flopsy.
So I think there is a lot to be changed with respect to women, but there is a lot to be changed with respect to the diversity of people and women that are represented in Parliament.
You should get a death to all white men sari printed up, you fucking racist cunt.
Yeah, Susan Lee, I think that is an interesting conversation that we're having, those intersectional conversations. It's not just about white women, it's about actually addressing diversity more broadly in our country. What is your thinking about the way your side of politics, the conservative side, needs to sort of tackle this issue?
We'll hear from the fake conservative in a moment, but allow myself, an actual conservative, to answer that one for you. Intersectionality is a social cancer, a disease that deserves to be criminalised, dreamt up by Kimberly Crenshaw in the 80s to inculcate a system of racial and gender inequality under the law to benefit people like herself, black and female. The premise being that you should gain advantage not through merit or truth, but based on manufactured victimhood status, i.e., if you are black, you are oppressed, and if you're a woman, you are oppressed. And if you're a black woman, you are doubly oppressed, and that the oppressed should be granted seniority and privilege over those that don't fall into the victimhood identity, and that the benchmark for whether you are deserving or not is not merit, nor truth, nor equality under the law, but identity. Intersectionality makes no attempt to correct any historical injustices that may have given privilege to whites over blacks in the eyes of the law, but merely to reverse that position so that blacks can be cunts to white people with impunity. That's why overt racists like this Greens Muslim senator can freely complain about there being too many white men and not suffer a single consequence of her open racism. Just imagine if someone were to get up on TV and demand that the Harlem Globetrotters be dismantled and restructured because it has too many black people in it. That's no different to what these women are arguing. But they're railing against Cracker, so it's okay. The ridiculous irony of Crenshaw's intersectionality is that her narrative of black women being oppressed, denied opportunity and their voices not being heard, is directly contradicted by the fact that she herself is a highly educated, highly paid UCLA law professor whose complete bullshit was lapped up wholesale by the feminist movement. Anyway, back to the fake conservative.
It depends who puts themselves forward. So what we have to do is encourage more women from diverse backgrounds, more people from diverse backgrounds to put themselves forward. And if I was making a political remark, which I don't really want to do because I love the collegiate nature of these conversations, there is a notable woman from a diverse background in Western Sydney who's being pushed out by Christina Keneally at the next election. And I think I have to call that out. And I don't mind when similar things are called out across the spectrum.
Yeah, but this is contemporary Australia. Women being bullies in Australia is totally acceptable these days.
But I'm glad Maureen mentioned the Women's Task Force, because we have some, you know, really strong women sitting at that table. Maurice Payne, Senator Anne Rustin, Jane Hume, who represents Women's Economic Security. I represent Maurice Payne in the lower house. I'm there and I've been able to bring my particular passion to that table, which is the specialist capability in our domestic violence courts that mean when women are victims of sexual assault or indeed any form of violence, that they get the wraparound treatment within our court system that they deserve.
No one argues that genuine victims don't deserve justice, but not at the expense of the presumption of innocence, which is what's occurring in Australia.
I use that as an example, but all of the women at that table are bringing forward, you know, really powerful voices. Childcare from Jane Hume, international women from Maurice Payne, and regional women from Bridget McKenzie. We've never had this grouping before at the cabinet table. It's very, very powerful.
And where is the change? When are we going to see the kind of tangible consequences of this grouping? Because there's been this long list of changes that a very powerful group of women who have become household names would like to see in our country. I'm talking Grace Tame, Brittany Higgins.
Disgrace Tame and Drinky Higgins aren't powerful women. They're gold victim card holders who won't take a shred of personal responsibility for their own participation in their circumstances, but moreover, have done nothing to help anyone but themselves.
Christine Holgate, Lucy Turnbull, you know, universal childcare, they are calling for all of the recommendations of Kate Jenkins' report to be implemented, including employers having this positive duty on them, Susan Leader, take action on sexual harassment in the workplace. When are we going to see all of that enacted?
Never, because you could eradicate every bit of sexual harassment in the workplace, but it won't stem one iota accusations of harassment being made.
Well, it's all happening. I mean, 42 of the 55, I think, recommendations have either been funded or implemented. Some of them involve state governments. So if you're going to do them properly and demonstrate that you care, you have to bring everyone that has a role in that decision around the table.
Typical Patricia Karvelis. It's been done or it's being done, but when are we going to see it being done? There's no gender pay gap, so when are we going to do something about the gender pay gap? There was a report yesterday about a woman who killed her three children and suicided, but when are we going to stop violence against women and children, but not men?
We saw a $1.9 billion economic security package coming out of the Women's Cabinet. A lot of that is centred on childcare. From today, I think 82,000 women will immediately be $2,600 a year better off, and I can actually run those numbers through a whole range of different income groups. And as a previous childcare minister, I know how much that matters. And, you know, the flexibility that women have to move between the jobs that they want and have secure income and superannuation in their retirement. I mean, I'm seeing things come out of that group all the time. And look, with respect to Brittany Higgins and Grace Tame.
Oh, here we go again. Virtue signalling overdrive.
Both of them are force for nature. Incredibly amazing women who have led so much of what we've seen across the country. I want to pay tribute to them.
Pay being the operative word in that statement. According to Biography Gist, Grace Tame is worth around $500,000 and is one of the richest advocates in the country. How much is Grace Tame worth? Grace Tame's net worth is estimated at around $500,000. Her main source of income is from her career as an activist and advocate. Tame's successful career has earned her some luxurious lifestyles and some fancy car trips. She is one of the richest and most influential activists and advocates in Australia. Also according to Biography Gist, Brittany Higgins has a net worth of between $1 million and $5 million. No doubt that coming from the undisclosed sum that Linda Reynolds paid Brittany Higgins in compensation. Possibly the highest price ever forked out by someone for telling the truth.
And I want to once again say to the women out there who see us in a very spoilt workplace in some respects with the conditions we have and the access we have.
No. It's not a spoilt workplace, Susan. It's a toxic workplace. I mean, I know you work there and are speaking from first-hand experience, but you're destroying Patricia Karvelis' whole narrative. I can just about hear her teeth grinding from here.
Katie Gallagher, would Labor enact this long list of demands that have been articulated by this wide group of women?
See what I mean when I say that Patricia Karvelas could be handed indisputable evidence that there's no gender pay gap, and will immediately follow with, what are we going to do about the gender pay gap? She's just been told that 42 of the 55 recommendations have already been implemented at a cost of $1.9 billion, and yet she turns straight around and asks if the ALP will enact these policies if elected. Is it dumbness? Is it dishonesty? Or some percentage of both?
Certainly when I've had a look at it this morning, I mean, incredibly talented women putting forward a united voice. Of course, Labor would look at all of it. We've said that we would implement the Respect at Work report in its entirety, so we would pick up the bits that the Morrison government have ignored. But the job in government, if we were fortunate to get there, is much bigger. I mean, there's so many issues affecting women, young women, older women, women from diverse backgrounds.
Women from outer space, women who eat a cheesecake per day, women who are women, women who are men, women who use tampons, women who don't, women who smoke tampons, you know, women from a whole range of diverse backgrounds. Women, 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 women.
You know, childcare, housing, domestic violence, superannuation, income security, cost of living, these are all issues that predominantly affect or disproportionately affect women.
Superannuation disproportionately affects women, does it? You mean like when the ANZ Bank is granted an exemption from the Sex Discrimination Act so that they can pay women more than men toward their super? Or do you mean when I walk into the supermarket and buy a loaf of bread and when I get to the checkout the woman says, that loaf of bread is normally $3.50, but you only have to pay $3 because you're a man? No, that doesn't happen, does it?
Aged care workers, the care economy. I mean, these are massive challenges facing our country. We need a government that isn't going to sit around for 10 years and pat them on the head and then all of a sudden before the election go, oh, there's all these things we want to do. We need a government that's prepared to tackle them all, and I can assure you that an Albanese government would do just that.
Oof, that just sounds like woman-splaining to me.
Maureen Faruqi, I know you've been critical of the way the government's handled some of these issues, but Senator, do you think there is genuine change afoot? We've heard from the minister there that she actually, you know, thinks that quotas need to be looked at. She wants to push for that, that there's a women's committee of cabinet looking at these issues. Are we on the cusp of something which is genuine change?
I mean, if I'm really honest...
First time for everything, I suppose.
There is a lot of talk, there is a lot of lip service, and there is a lot of tinkering around the edges. And that's not how you change these entrenched systems of sexism and misogyny and patriarchy that have translated into such a disproportionate impact on women and on the gender inequality that we see at the moment.
Sexism, misogyny and patriarchy. Shut up, Marxist halfwit. And yeah, it's disproportionate, all right. Call me when Patricia Karvelas in the ABC produce a show on men's issues on International Men's Day, November 19th. Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath.
I think the list that the women have come out today is an incredible list to actually look at those systems that need to be changed. And there are things that the Greens, some of them, we have been campaigning on for years. Just yesterday, I launched our Greens policy on universal and free childcare.
Well, that made a lot of sense. The policies they've been pushing for years that she launched just yesterday.
We know that women are held back from what they want to do, whether it's study or work.
Women are held back from study and work? What the fuck are you on about? What, are you trying to win the 2022 Biggest Liar of the Year award or something? Ironically, of course, she's a proud Muslim, the religion and culture that in other countries, Islamic countries, does deny women education and employment. Seriously, there's a picture of this woman in the dictionary next to the term mental retardation.
Because they just can't get accessible childcare. So what I think is, PK, that women are sick and tired of talk.
That would only put you on par with men, and a lot of women, who are sick and tired of hearing truth-challenged, intersectional Marxist morons dribble shit from every orifice.
And I see this anger and energy out there in women, which says that we are tired of chipping away at this wall of white privilege and patriarchy, you know?
That's right, overt racist and sexist pig. Sour. You just keep going. When the pendulum swings back the other way in the future and people wake up to what a sexist racist you are, you're going to be remembered by the public as a totally disgusting individual.
It's time to bulldoze that wall down.
You sitting on it would probably do the job, though.
And make these changes that will actually have an impact. I mean, if we are serious that we want to prevent violence against women, that we want pay equality, then we have to talk about expanded, paid parental leave.
Is there a correlation between the issue of domestic violence and paid parental leave? Is there, setting aside that men are parents too, although that reality doesn't seem to be on your radar? But what it sounded like you said to me was, if we want chocolate, if we want cupcakes, we have to talk about the price of brown onions.
Then we have to talk about higher pay for caring work, which is feminized at the moment. We have to talk about free childcare. We have to talk about a home for all. And we have to invest in it, not talk. The time for talk is over. And we, in the balance of power, hopefully after we've got rid of this Liberal government, will make sure that we push the next government to make these changes.
Well, she's right about getting rid of the Liberal government, being Marxist light and all. That's why Fat Man should be PM. There won't be any more Daigo, there won't be any more Chinese buying up our land, there won't be face masks, there won't be forced injections, there won't be children being taught how to be a good homo. And there won't be any more apocalyptic climate hysteria when there's a flood or a bushfire, because sensible people know that these things have been happening every 10 years or so since day dot and have nothing to do with climate change.
Susan Lee, there was a candidate for Prime Minister who was female on your side of politics. Her name was Julie Bishop. She's no longer in the Parliament. I look now at your front bench and I can't, unless you're going to put your hand up here on the panel and I'd love to break that story, I can't see the emerging future Conservative female Prime Minister on the Liberal side. Why can't I see her?
Well, the short answer is that it doesn't fit your narrative and you want to instill in your viewers the idea that it's never going to happen, even though eventually it will. But it's funny you brought that up because, as I talked about in a long-forgotten video, that after Bill Shortcock lost the unlosable election, I thought for sure that Tanya Plibersek would become opposition leader. Yet the ALP passed her over for Uncle Scrunchface, and yet Tanya is the only one out of the two that has a vagina, or at least that I'm aware of. Shame on you, ALP.
Katie Gallagher, final word to you on this panel, and it has been a really interesting panel, but yes, you're right, Labor has delivered one female Prime Minister. She was treated pretty shabbily, I would think most people would agree.
Perhaps except for Kevin Rudd, but she did have the same obligatory answers to everything.
I will not be lectured about sexism and misogyny by this man. I will not. And the government Order. Will not be lectured about sexism Order. And misogyny by this man.
Education? It's the misogyny, Mr. Speaker. Aged care? It's the misogyny, Mr. Speaker. Well, what about infrastructure? It's the misogyny, Mr. Speaker.
It was a terrible time in politics and a really, really fractious time. Will Labor deliver a second potential leader for the country who's a woman, and when will that be?
I have no doubt that there will be future female Labor Prime Ministers. I look at the talent that sits around our shadow cabinet table, and there's so many of them. Seriously, so many. We've got 50% of women represented across that shadow cabinet. Absolutely, there will be. And we've had a proud record. 50% of Labor's leadership team are female. Our Senate leader, of course, is female. Like, we are strong, powerful voices within that our caucus. And yes, there'll be plenty of them. New, emerging, young women coming up through the ranks. There's going to be plenty of them, and I look forward to supporting them on their journey.
Even though they got those positions by gender quotas and not on merit.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
In many ways, 2021 was the year politics changed when it came to women. Joining me is news.com.au's political editor Samantha Maiden and The Guardian's political editor Catherine Murphy, both of them Walkley Award winners and experts in this area particularly. Now, Sam...
Now, you don't want to hear what Samantha Maiden has to say, do you? No, me either. Thanks for watching, everyone.